On this episode of The Big Number, on the eve of the 2026 trade deadline, we react to James Harden being traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Darius Garland. Is Harden the missing piece to get the Cavs across the finish line? Plus, we break down why the Jazz would seemingly break away from their tankathon and trade for Jaren Jackson Jr. All this coming up right now. Whoa, breaking news. We just recorded and now I gotta talk about this Anthony Davis trade. Of course, as we hit the finish button, Anthony Davis gets traded to the Washington Wizards. According to ESPN Shams Charania, the Wizards have acquired Anthony Davis along with Jaden Hardy, D'Angelo Russell, Dante Exum, and the Dallas Mavericks have received, get this, Chris Middleton, A.J. Johnson, Malachi Branham, Marvin Bagley III, and two first-round picks. And if I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan, I would not blame you. If I'm talking to the Mavs fans right now, I would not blame you if you just gave up. Like, I wouldn't. You had a top three player in the NBA, went to the NBA Finals, and you had Luka Doncic, 25 years old, and now the trade last year has been parlayed into this poo-poo platter from the Washington Wizards, the worst team in the NBA. You are now sitting on a trade pile, the trade return from trading in his prime Luka Doncic, Max Christie, Chris Middleton, A.J. Johnson, Malachi Branham, Marvin Bagley, a 2029 first-round pick from the Lakers, a 2026 first-round pick from OKC, meaning OKC's pick this year, which is going to be 30th or basically the worst first-round pick you could possibly have in this year's draft. You also have the 2030 first-round pick from Golden State that is top 20 protected, so it's going to be at best a back-of-the-first-round draft and three future seconds. I'm sorry. What? You put Anthony Davis in a trade to go get Flotsam, basically to tank. Thank God for Cooper Flagg. I mean, if I'm a Mavs fan, I am apoplectic. I'm beside myself that this is the return for Luka Doncic. At least it's a clear indication that the Mavericks are tanking, that they're going to try to build around Cooper Flagg. They're not going to try to do this half measure with Anthony Davis. But good golly, Miss Molly. I just looked this up. Estimated plus minus, widely regarded as the best predictive measure of your all-in-one value in the NBA. The Lakers traded Max Christie and Anthony Davis, and that turned into Chris Middleton, A.J. Johnson, Malachi Branham, Marvin Bagley. There is not a single player in that trade haul for Luka Doncic that is currently a top 150 player in the league. I'm going to repeat that. No one that the Mavs got back for Luka Doncic is considered a top 50, not even top 175 player in the NBA. Okay. Max Christie, 212. Chris Middleton, 193. Marvin Bagley, 279th in estimated plus minus. Just as a, did the Lakers get a top 100 player for Luka Doncic? The answer is no. And here is the rankings. 193rd for Chris Middleton, 212 for Max Christie, 279 for Marvin Bagley. Branham and A.J. Johnson are a handful of the lowest valuable players in the league right now. A.J. Johnson, drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round, couldn't wait to get rid of him. Moved to the Washington Wizards, who couldn't wait to get rid of him, and now he's a Dallas Mav. What an atrocity. Not barely a top 200 player for Luka Doncic. And those first-round picks are, at best, okay. Like, you got a first-round pick from the Lakers that could be the last five picks of the draft. Like, more likely than not, it's a bottom 10 pick in the draft instead of a top 10 pick in the draft. They might not get a lottery pick for Luka Doncic or a top 100 player. Embarrassing. Nico Harrison, that was the first sin, was trading Luka Doncic for a C-plus package here. And unthinkable to trade a guy that your organization drafted and groomed into a top three pick, perennial MVP candidate in his prime, 25 years old, just went to the NBA Finals, and you turn it into this. I don't want to hear it that Cooper Flagg was part of this trade package. He was not acquired as part of this deal. They did not acquire the pick that turned into Cooper Flagg for trading Luka Doncic. That was just a gift from the heavens. That was pure luck. That was going all in with a 2-7 off suit and winning jackpot. It is a lottery of a lottery that you got Cooper Flagg. That is not part of the calculus. It's not. For a Mavs fan, I get it. You got Cooper Flagg, but the return for Luka Doncic was atrocious. And it's a new regime. It's not Nico Harrison. What this signals to me, can't believe I'm saying this, what this signals to me is that 2 years after being in the NBA Finals, the Dallas Mavericks are full on tanking. Full on. Right now, they've got some competition, right? Kyrie Irving might be out for this season. Okay. Cooper Flagg, really good, might be rookie of the year, one of the best teenagers we've ever seen. Has the record for most points scored by a rookie. I can't believe we're sitting here saying that the return for Luka Doncic was Chris Middleton in the year 2026 and a bunch of picks. That's it. Stunned. Okay. Chris Middleton is 34 years old. Okay. And that's the jewel of this trade. Okay. You can talk yourself into Max Christie. Okay. Great shooter, shooting specialist. Okay. But this is embarrassing. Cooper Flagg right now is the best player on the Mavs by far. And I just don't know if you're a Mavs fan, what you can say at this point that you traded Luka Doncic for this. Cooper Flagg was a side thing. It had nothing to do with the Luka Doncic trade. Wasn't part of the plan. So, the tanking. Let's talk about this. The Dallas Mavericks right now are in the seventh slot for the draft lottery in this upcoming draft. Utah is 3.5 games ahead of them at the sixth slot. And they just traded for Jaren Jackson Jr. Becomes very interesting. The Washington Wizards that you just traded Anthony Davis that said, yeah, Trae Young, we're good. We're good. We're not going to rush you back from this injury. I don't think you're going to see Anthony Davis moved or playing again for the Washington Wizards. Dallas could move up to 5. Dallas could move up to 6. I don't think they move up to 5 or anything closer than that with Cooper Flagg on this roster. Milwaukee might be trading Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're a game back of Dallas in the Tankapalooza ranks. Memphis just traded Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant could be on the move as well. I mean, this tanking is going to be so aggressive here in the next couple months, because Utah has a top 8 protected pick or else it goes to OKC. Let's talk real quick about OKC. OKC just traded for Jared McCain, who was the leading guy for Rookie of the Year last year before he went down. Jared McCain getting flipped for some draft picks is very interesting in the Giannis sweepstakes. Daryl Morey right here is essentially saying, hey, Milwaukee, you wanted first-round picks, so you can go pick the guy. If you don't love Jared McCain, I get it. But if you want to pick the guy going forward and have your blank canvas of assets, the 2026 Houston first-round pick, 2027 second most favorable of OKC, Houston, Indiana, Miami, and then a second-round pick from Milwaukee in 2028 and a second-round pick from OKC in 2028. What this tells me is that Daryl Morey is big game hunting for Giannis and is getting a bunch of assets, draft assets, to float towards John Horst over there in Milwaukee. Stay tuned on this. Jared McCain was beloved in Philly last year, and now he's gone to OKC. I thought OKC was going to go after a Kobe White type, and now they've gotten Jared McCain, who becomes another one of these might be one of the better young players in the league. Kaysen Wallace, Chet Holmgren, Jared McCain, AJ Mitchell, Jalen Williams. This is insane how good they are. An embarrassment of young riches there in OKC. Oh, no, by the way, they got Nikola Topic and Thomas Horvath too. Wow. I'm still stunned that this is the trade haul for Anthony Davis. Sorry, for Luka Doncic. Max Christie, Chris Middleton, AJ Johnson, Malachi Branham, Marvin Bagley, and three meh first-round picks for Luka Doncic. Look at the trade package for Damian Lillard. Look at the trade package for Kevin Durant, an aging Kevin Durant. James Harden past his prime. Luka was 25 just coming off the NBA Finals. Cooper Flagg, man. Can you imagine if the Dallas Mavericks didn't get Cooper Flagg and they ended up with like the 10th pick in last year's draft? Can you imagine? Because we're pretty close to that scenario where they got, I don't know, Jeremiah Fears or Carter Bryant instead of Cooper Flagg. Cedric Coward, that's a nice piece, but man. Cooper Flagg, man. Every Dallas Mavericks fan should be getting that jersey if you haven't already to make them forget about the atrocity that is the Luka Doncic trade that just gets worse and worse as the days go by. All right. That's it for now. Jared McCain is a Thunder and Anthony Davis is a Wizard. I don't think he's going to be playing for them. Same with Trae Young this year. And that's wild. That's wild that the Dallas Mavericks did that. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Trade Deadline Week. It's a very special day here at the Big Number HQ. We've got Dan, my man, your man, Dan Devine here as we're kind of in this little holding pattern. Our producers are in our ear waiting to tell us if news breaks. And as of now, we've got lots to talk about. But how are you doing here, Dan, on this Wednesday afternoon Eastern time?
I'm doing great. We had a flurry of activity on Tuesday. One thing that I personally wasn't on my sort of vision board for the week. Maybe it should have been, but it was not. And then it sort of showed up Monday night. And then by the end of Tuesday, it was all done. And I think that's what we're going to start with. So let's put up some numbers, Tom. Hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
Yeah, this week's big number is 179.7. That is the number of win shares that James Harden has accumulated in his NBA career, according to StatHead.com. Tracking, basically, it's a lot of production, winning player, James Harden. And that's fourth all-time, that total, about 180 win shares. Fourth all-time for a player who has zero championships. It's, you know, the likely candidates here.
Honor.
Yeah, this is, I'm sorry to say it, James, but this is kind of one of those topics that we feel like we always hit is that James Harden is on the move again to chase that elusive championship, and he's fourth all time in this category. Karl Malone is on this list. John Stockton is on this list. And of course, Chris Paul. And I'm not doing this as a who's better ranking. We're not going to do that on this program. What I'm trying to establish is that James Harden is one of the greatest players ever to pick up a basketball, and he is still looking for that first Larry O'Brien to hoist over his head. Charles Barkley there, fifth on that list. James Harden's 14th all-time in win shares and fourth among those without a championship. So he's in this like top upper crust of players that are chasing that elusive title, and I don't know where, Dan, you stand on, did he increase his chances here? Like, do we think that James Harden moving over to Cleveland was all about the money, or was it all about the championship chase? And we know that James Harden's well-versed in how to, you know, chase that championship and spin it that way. But I, as far as I can tell, this was James Harden being as opportunistic as ever and not getting the assurances that he needed from the Clippers that he was going to get long-term money. He was not eligible for an extension, but James Harden said, okay, I know that the Cavs are perennially underachieving in the postseason. Darius Garland's hurt, and we don't know if he's going to be back. And so they might have a real need at the point guard position next to Donovan Mitchell. And so I think this was all about leverage. I think this is just James Harden wanting to get that long-term money and masking it as a championship quest. But as of now, Dan, the Cleveland Cavaliers have moved up into the top position in the East favorites at BetMGM, as well as all the other prediction markets. They have a slight edge over Detroit, New York, Boston, Philly, Orlando. And so you can see it now that James Harden, in chasing that elusive title, he is, I guess, now in the pole position in the Eastern Conference, according to these markets here. What did you make of James Harden making his way out of the Clippers after being so good this season in the last like month or so? And here we are. He's a Cav. Oddly enough, it's kind of like two partners who have been in a rough spot and you're just like, look, we both can't get over the hill and we need each other at this point. But didn't we say the same thing about the Clippers? And then he just left that group a second ago. So yeah. I don't know what to make of this. What do you say?
There's sort of so much to parse through with this. My first thought when you said, like, is it more about James Harden chasing a ring or chasing that paper? I think it's a real, like, ¿por qué lo nos dos? Like, why can't it be both? I think part of it, yeah, the operating, the driving animating force here, I think, is that James Harden's contract for next season is only guaranteed for about $13.3 million. And James Harden was like, I would like very much for that to be fully guaranteed. Thank you very much. Or to know that I've got a pathway to having guaranteed money well beyond the end of next season. I'm about to be 37 years old. I'm not only not done playing, I'm still playing at like an all-star. He made All-NBA last year. They had a very reasonable argument for all-star this season, but did not wind up making the cut. I'm at this level. I should still be compensated like a star because I'm playing like one. And the Clippers said, I don't know if you kind of see, or at least indicated, I don't know if you kind of see the vibes around here. Like, maybe the walls are closing in, things are falling apart, we can't seem to find the trees. Things are weird here, and in a couple years, we're in line to, we have no long-term money on the books past 2027. I believe no non-rookie scale money on the books past 2027 outside of Ivica Zubats. And so we're going to hit the reset button. That's the plan in 2027. And we are probably not going to want to have a 38, 39, 40-year-old point guard soaking up a lot of money during that process. So this is an opportunity. It's weird. Like, of all of the James Harden divorces and splitsvilles, this one seems to be the most amicable. Like, okay, I want to get paid for more for longer. We don't want to do that. All right, let's find a resolution. Please. And so and it happens quickly and relatively without a relative lack of acrimony with James Harden on the way out, giving an interview to Ramona Shelburne about how he feels like it was a great 2.5 years. And we just kind of, we can have a relationship end without cracking each other. And I feel like every other city that James Harden was in before is like, oh, you can? For real? I didn't know that. So that, I think that's true. It is about the, I would imagine without any sourced reporting here, in order for James Harden to get to Cleveland, he had to A, waive the veto rights he had over any deal, where as a player on a 1 year, with one guaranteed year on his contract, he has like a limited version of a no trade clause due to his bird rights. Like if any player on a 1 year deal that doesn't have anything guaranteed past that can't be forced to be traded and then sacrifice their bird rights in the process. So you get a limited sort of no trade clause. He had to say, I'm all good. I want this trade. He also had to say, I don't want to be paid my 15% trade kicker, which would amount to about $2.3 million and would make the deal financially unable to happen because the Cavs are over the second apron and they can't take in more money than they send out. So he would wind up accounting for more on the salary cap than Darius Garland. So he had to say, I don't want that $2.3 million and I want to go to this place. Why would he do that? If I can get my Windhorse fingers out, why would he do that? And I think the implication is, there will likely be a multi-year deal for James Harden coming at some point. And we'll see. TBD on that.
Or else he'll call Kobe Altman a liar in front of an audience of Chinese people, which is
Chinese
always
children
in the bag.
And what?
Yeah, children know
have,
this.
Have, have, you know, performers at a gentleman's establishment, perhaps walking around with a sign saying Kobe Altman is a liar, which was one of the great images of recent NBA history.
Not AI.
The championship
folks,
component.
Not AI. That was real.
No. All too real. Verifiable. The championship component, he had said in the interview with Ramona Shelburne, like, this, I wanted to go to Cleveland because I think there is a path there. Part of it is just the East being in softer conference, right? I think also the indication of those odds, everybody needs to kind of realize the Pistons are 37-12, 5.5 games clear of everybody else, with the second best defense in the NBA and a top 10 offense and like an all NBA first team point guard. Like, they're really good. I understand everyone keeps saying that the East is wide open. They should probably watch the Pistons more. They're really good. So we'll start there. But if you are not particularly afraid of the Detroit Pistons, you're saying, well, I go in a situation where I could be with the best guy in any series I walk into. Donovan Mitchell's been playing like that. He's been playing at an all-NBA level. The reporting suggests that Donovan Mitchell was pretty interested in the idea of a partnership with James Harden. He's on board for it. He maybe thinks this elevates their ceiling in a way that, to a greater degree than what they previously had on hand. So Harden looks at it and says, softer conference, already around like a home court advantage type of situation, as opposed to fighting through the play-in and slogging it out along the way. Instead of me having to play 36, 37 minutes a night every night and be the like top usage all-time dude, I got another guy here that I can share with. And there's it's a maybe easier work for me, a pathway to money, and a more direct pathway to a deep playoff run. Now, maybe things get, you know, go our way, we get some breaks, we wind up in the finals. It's not a crazy thought process. There's some history for both Cleveland and James Harden that suggests getting past the second round of the playoffs isn't all that easy, but you can see the thought process there, and he kind of Euro-stepped his way through some boundaries to get to a place where he's going to be back in the playoffs. He's going to have an opportunity to show that he still is worth that kind of payday moving forward, and nobody had to hold up any signs on the way out the door. Not so bad.
Not so bad. I guess he's looking at the situation and saying, how am I going to get the bag? And I don't really put too much stock in what Donovan Mitchell says, because we've got, how many times have we heard KD and Kyrie Irving really excited to partner up with James Harden, Joel Embiid and Daryl Morey? It's a perfect marriage. He goes to Kawhi. It's a perfect situation going back home. And within 2 years and change, he finds his way out of that situation. So we're doing this again. We're doing this again with the Cavs, with the James Harden situation. And we did this with the Clippers. It feels like Groundhog Day. I know we just had this, yesterday or this week. I don't know what day it is. You want to hear something, Dan? My kids have been in school for 15 out of the last 48 days here in Charlotte. Okay. I don't know.
That's too few.
That's the big number. Okay. I don't know what day it is anymore. And so I'm sitting here and I'm looking at Groundhog Day with James Harden, where it feels like we've been down this road. You know why? Because we have been down this road with James Harden, where everything seems good and then he's plotting his exit a year or 2 years later. And so I feel like the Cleveland situation is two people. What's the Billy Joel line? There's nothing better than drinking loneliness, better than drinking alone. I am so far afield at this point. What is it, Dan? What is it? The line? There's a drink called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone?
Drinking alone. Yeah, you're thinking of Piano Man. And Tom, I think it's important that we tell the audience that you were on a live broadcast last night for the Portland Trailblazers. They had an 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time tip-off. Tom is really powering through it. He's basically playing three games in four nights back-to-back right now. And he's grinding it out for us. So you got to forgive him not having full, complete recall of all of Billy Joel's lyrics off the top of his head. I deserve no such forbearance. I just don't know the words to all the Billy Joel songs personally, which is shocking because he's hung more banners in MSG than the Knicks have in my time here as a New Yorker. So I'm apologizing for that. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
The audience has to know. The audience has to know.
Okay.
They're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. That is the line. And that's how I analogize the James Harden whole thing with the Cleveland Cavaliers is that they're both sharing that drink they call loneliness, right? They're both trying to get over the hump. They've been perennially underachieving. And guess what? They can both talk themselves into it until it all falls apart like it seems to continually with James Harden. I digress. Go ahead.
Well, it's a wonderful digression. The issue where I can get myself to talking myself into it too. And you know, we were in the run up to the show before we started hit the record buttons. We were talking a little bit about Arrested Development. It is the Tobias Junke, like, they everyone deludes themselves into thinking an open relationship can work for them. But maybe it could work for us. This is that again, in the James Harden situation. And what is the sixth team that's you know, taken this sort of roll of the dice? However, the way to talk yourself into it is James Harden, even if Darius Garland was healthy, and Darius Garland deserves a fair like shake in this. We are 9 months removed from him being arguably the second best player on a 64-win team and like the driving, like an all-star caliber, off-ball, on-ball player. Like, he's really good when he's healthy. He is not healthy and has not been since the last postseason. And has missed half this season with injuries to either of his big toes. Like, first it was a surgical repair, I believe, on the left one, and now he's out with a sprain of the right big toe. And so this is, in terms of right now, James Harden's a better player than Darius Garland, and he's also more available and more durable and more reliable. Even the parts of James Harden that you can reliably be like a little bit worried about, at least you know when they're coming. They're likely to come in game 6 and 7 of a playoff series in a few months, as opposed to Darius Garland, where you're kind of like, when is he coming back? When he's been on the floor this season, he hasn't been particularly good. The gap between them this year right now is pretty vast. And so you are looking at a version of the Cavs that's better today than it was yesterday because it's got a better point guard than it used to, and one that's likely to play, maybe not on Wednesday, when, by the way, these two teams play that's each it, other yeah. in Los Angeles, which is pretty fascinating. But when next James Harden gets on the floor, this elevates the floor of that team and potentially elevates its ceiling. And so if the argument against doing it is, and it's a pretty basic argument that a number of people have made, I'm not exactly splitting the atom here, James Harden's 36, and Darius Garland is 26. And it's like, not just like just 10 years, it's like 10 and a half years between the two of them. So you are trading for a significantly older player that's under contract for shorter, that you're probably going to have to pay for longer now. The argument for that is 4 years from now doesn't really matter. And I think it's worth wondering why now in Cleveland, 4 years ago, it doesn't really, 4 years from now, doesn't matter all that much. What matters most is right now and next year. And I think we're probably going to wind up talking some more about the reasons why for that. But yeah, this, all of this is an acceleration. It is our timeline and our runway is truncated and our timeline has shortened. Why is that? And what does that lead to? I think those are some interesting questions to ask, including one that was raised in a pretty good column by a guy that I know named Tom Haberstroh.
Yeah, that was a great segue into the reason why I think the Cavs are now the favorites in the East, even if it's a slight favorite, is not just because of the James Harden deal. I think it's also a projection about what might be coming next, right? Is if you have James Harden, does that raise your chances that Giannis Antetokounmpo, yes, I said it, the Greek freak, looks at this situation with a lot more, a much more rosier outlook on your opportunity in Cleveland to win a championship? Because before, with Darius Garland, who's been dealing with a foot issue plural, like, I don't think you can look at Darius Garland and say that's a bankable star for my championship aspirations. And one thing that I've always felt is, what's worse than a 7-footer with foot problems? A 6-footer with foot problems. Okay, because they're not tall anymore. They can't grow a foot, right? No, literally. Oh, here we go again. My brain is just mush. They can't grow 12 inches taller if they got foot problems. At least a 7-footer, you're still 7 feet tall. Darius Garland, if he doesn't have his zip, if he doesn't have his legs underneath him, and he's already a defensive liability, I don't see how Donovan Mitchell or Giannis Antetokounmpo or Evan Mobley or Jared Allen looks at that and says, yeah, I feel really good about that situation. Yes, he's 10 years younger than James Harden, but the window is really short. Like you said, it's all about Donovan Mitchell. It's all about how do we keep him happy before he can potentially leave next summer as a free agent. And that's what Cleveland is banking on. And it's also banking on that, hey, if we have James Harden and Donovan Mitchell, does that become more attractive for Giannis in a potential swing trade at the deadline within 24 hours of the trade deadline here as we're sitting here? And I'm not saying it's likely that the Cavs will get Giannis and Antetokounmpo, but I do think it's more likely now that they have James Harden instead of Darius Collard. I think Giannis looks at this situation and says, I need star guys to help take the load off of me. We've heard that from him weirdly saying, I'm not a high usage guy. I'm not a guy who's going to go and take 30 shots on the floor. Maybe he's secretly looking for that in his next destination, is to have someone who can take off not just the burden, the scoring burden and the usage burden, but also kind of the responsibility burden, the legacy burden, is that if James Harden's there, then it kind of takes a little bit of the shine off of and the spotlight off of Giannis as the savior to the Cleveland situation, and especially if LeBron is there. Can you imagine if LeBron, I think LeBron would be playing with house money at that point next year. If he comes back home to Cleveland as a free agent this summer with Giannis, with James Harden and Donovan Mitchell, and they could still keep Jared Allen in this formation, as I laid out in the column, you can get James Harden and LeBron and Giannis Antetokounmpo and have Jared Allen as your starting five in that situation and keep a bunch of the good young players on the roster. So I think it's really tantalizing. I think it's worth talking about. I wrote about it. And I think also those markets, the betting markets, the prediction markets, I think they're baking it in that they made this trade, the Keon Ellis trade, the Dennis Schroeder trade, and this James Harden trade with bigger deals in mind. They get those done several hours before the trade deadline, ahead of that crunch time, and keep their opportunities open for a monster swing trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo or somebody else at the deadline that we don't know about. And I'll say this before we take a break. I feel like this trade, the Darius Garland, James Harden trade, and the Triple J trade, Jaren Jackson Jr. going to Utah, I feel like that was a gift from the basketball gods, Dan. I feel like it was, we've been talking about Jonathan Kuminga and Giannis for so long and not getting anywhere and feeling like, can we just stop talking about this stuff and go move towards some new flesh? I want to talk about something new, please, please. And here we go with two deals that totally blindsided everybody. As of 72 hours ago, Dan, did anyone have this on the big board? I certainly didn't have these two trades. And so I'm actually very thankful for that.
Yeah, there's a lot to enjoy about it. It's also very funny. I find myself before every trade deadline, because I wind up, you know, you're writing reaction columns, in the days leading up to it. I will wind up on Thursday writing a big honkin' winners and losers of the trade deadline column, which I do every year. So I try to track rumors and reporting like for each of the 30 teams in the days and weeks that are running up to the trade deadline. So I've got like a running Word doc of that's, you know, who knows how many links and thousands of words and whatever. And you go back and you look at, I'm looking at the reporting from the national guys and the local people about the Cavs and the Jazz. And it was all like, get off a Lonzo Ball for luxury tax purposes, try to get on below the second apron, and be a facilitator in other people's deals. That was all that was coming out. So top marks, I guess, to Kobe Altman, to Justin Zanuck, to their respective front offices for keeping a lid on those things. Because, yeah, the most of the reporting that the rumblings that I saw coming out were all about like small moves around the margins, let alone they're not certainly not at all these huge central foundational cornerstone kind of pieces that wound up moving on Tuesday and maybe setting the table for more to come before Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, we're probably going to get some out of left field here, but I feel like these two deals where I'm satiated with big moves that I didn't see coming, but we're gonna have to drill down deeper on this Cleveland Cavaliers team and this and the trade for James Harden and Darius Garland. So we're gonna do that after the break, dig a little bit deeper on this trade. I'm gonna hear your three little numbers and we'll jump into this in a little bit here. As a reminder, everybody, we got the trade deadline on Thursday. Go subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. I will be doing this live with Kevin O'Connor on Thursday afternoon at around the deadline. So make sure you go subscribe. And we had an awesome time last week doing a live show, Dan. It's going to be really fun tomorrow. I'm sure just madness will happen tomorrow afternoon. And you can get this show, Kevin O'Connor show, Dunker Spot, all at Yahoo NBA. Go check that out. Subscribe, tell your friends, tell your buddies. And we'll be back right after this. All right, today's big number is 179.7. That is James Harden's collective total of win shares in his career. That is fourth all time for someone who doesn't have a championship. And now he's got a pretty good chance here, about 8% chance, according to the betting markets, that he will win a championship this season with the Cleveland Cavaliers. But they got to do some things before that happens. So we're going to go with three little numbers here from Dan, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what is your first little number?
First little number is 112.4. That's the Cleveland Cavaliers' offensive rating this season with Donovan Mitchell on the bench. According to Cleaning the Glass, their numbers, as we know, strip out garbage time stats. So competitive possessions, Donovan Mitchell off the floor. That rate of scoring efficiency would rank 25th in the NBA, right between the New Orleans Pelicans and Brooklyn Nets. Not where you want to be. And you can say, as we talked about earlier with Darius Garland's various foot and toe injuries, missing, I believe it's cost him 25 games. The reason that it's been so bad is because Garland's been unavailable, right? The challenging part for the Cavs there is that when Garland has been available, they have been worse. The offensive rating is actually worse in Garland, no Mitchell minutes. It's 111.1, which is basically the Kings. And if there's one thing we've talked about a fair amount on the show, Tom, it's if you don't want to be anybody, it's you don't want to be the Kings. That's not where you want to be, especially if you have gut designs on competing for a title. All told, the Cavs have been a little more than 10 points per 100 possessions worse with Donovan Mitchell off the floor this season. Among high minutes players, that kind of on-off swing, it would fit right around Jimmy Butler and Victor Wembanyama, like a top 15 mark among high minutes guys in the league. That's the big difference that the Cavs have had. So that's the one of the theories, or one of the driving theories behind this trade, right? The on-court right now, it's you went from last year's sort of idyllic version of the Cavs was like more democratized, lower usage for Donovan. Everybody else eats. Garland's an all-star. Mobley's all NBA. Jared Allen gets more touches. Ty Jerome explodes. Like you've got sort of everybody getting a little bit more. This year, no Ty Jerome. Garland injured and ineffective. Mobley sort of stagnated in terms of his work as a creator. And you just wind up having more and more asked of Donovan Mitchell. He's got to put the cape on constantly. Highest usage rate since he left Utah. Highest true usage, which factors in like basically the share of offensive possessions you're involved with, even if you don't shoot, of his career. So bigger than even when he was in Utah. In theory now, you start Mitchell and Harden together, then you split them up, you stagger their minutes. You got 48 minutes of one of them on the floor at all times. And then if you're not getting cracked, to use James Harden's term, in the non-Mitchell minutes, suddenly you go from like trying to keep your head above water in the East to maybe back up at the top of the conference. So I think in terms of swing factors here, that's the big one. Like we can't suck without Donovan Mitchell on the floor. In theory, James Harden provides you a pathway for that to happen.
Yeah, he's a much more efficient player when he's got getting downhill. When you have James Harden getting downhill and he's not finishing at the rim as well as he used to. I think even during that stretch, James Harden, when they were 15-4, when in his previous 19 games when he was on the floor, the Cavs, the Clippers were, he wasn't shooting 40% from the floor. But the ability to get right to the free throw line is the reason why James Harden is so good, has been so good. And the question is, when it's winning time in the postseason, is he going to still get those calls in the postseason? Is he going to have the same tank, you know, ability to have enough energy to be withstanding all the rigors of the regular season on top of that, go into a postseason and be able to be the A1 usage guy for a team that has championship aspirations? I think what you're pointing out here is he doesn't have to be that guy. When you got Donovan Mitchell, you just stagger it and you're able to play a little bit more off the ball when you are playing with Donovan Mitchell. I still think he's going to have the ball in his hands primarily. I think it's a smart move on the margins to go to upgrade to James Harden. He's a little bit bigger. And so defensively, I don't think there is as much of a liability. When you got two guys who are like barely 6'1", 6'2", as we saw in the postseason before, and they just don't have that toughness up front to make up for this, is they're just undersized. And I think the whole staggering idea with James Harden is what I think is appealing for both of these guys, is that they don't have to grind themselves to a pulp in the postseason trying to carry this offense when you don't know the availability of Darius Garland going forward. And I think even if James Harden isn't prime James Harden, he still has so much gravity with the ball that even if he just penetrates into the paint a little bit and sprays out to shooters, it's going to make life so much easier for Donovan Mitchell. It's going to make so much life so much easier for Evan Mobley if he's out on in the corner or at the top of the key. For Jared Allen on those lobs, just makes things so much easier. And Darius Garland, he can do some of that stuff, but there is value in getting to the free throw line. Not only is it efficient, but it's also giving a break to your teammates that I think it can recharge the batteries when you get to the free throw line. It's an underrated reason why I think free throws are so important in today's NBA, is that it does allow you to kind of recharge a little bit. And for James Harden, that's a big deal. And for Donovan Mitchell, that's a big deal. Because without his wheels, Donovan Mitchell at his size, it just becomes this such a level up when he's able to get downhill and be that kind of shifty, bouncy, wiggly guy. And when you got James Harden shouldering the load, I think that becomes so much easier for you and the rest of the team.
Yeah, and they think about it from the individual players' respective histories. Like the best, most successful versions of these individual players were Donovan Mitchell playing alongside Mike Conley in Utah, right? It's James Harden playing alongside Chris Paul in Houston. Like, those were the teams that got the furthest for each of those respective players. And so the idea of having that stagger, having that timeshare, being able to play off one another, they're both excellent catch and shoot players when they actually do that. Like, there's reason to believe that that can mesh and work at a higher level. Our second little number this week is 161. That's how many minutes the Cavs' core four players had played together this season. That's Mitchell, Garland, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen. Plus 35 in 161 minutes. That's just not very much, right? 234 four-man lineups had played at least that many minutes this season, and plus 35 is just 91st in overall plus-minus among that group. It's not like championship caliber stuff. Now, we've seen that lineup. We have a couple of years of sample size of that lineup being awesome. They were fantastic when they first got together in 2022-23. They were fantastic last season. The year between there, you had Garland's injury issues, which then led to it not really being as available or as good. We're seeing a lot of that same thing this year. And so we've seen it also run aground in the postseason where, you know, you mentioned, or everybody has mentioned James Harden's shortcomings. Maybe worth noting that Darius Garland in his postseason career, 17.3 points per game, 5.5 assists per game, 43-34-86 shooting splits, a 13 player efficiency rating. So like sub average in those moments in the playoffs. So like if you are uncertain about the health, the like long-term or short-term health of Darius Garland's feet, how likely it is that he's going to be able to get back and get back to that all-star level quickly. And you just kind of run out of patience for eventually we'll get everybody healthy. Eventually it'll start looking better. It seems like that's sort of what happened here. For whatever reason, for one reason or another, the time horizon or the willingness to be patient and wait for everything to just come back together and start clicking, and for that 161-minute sample to start increasing, just time ran out.
It was incredibly underwhelming in the postseason last year, wasn't it? The core four together, where it was like, all right, this is the 64-win team. You got these guys playing together in those minutes. And I know guys were in and out of the lineup, but in those minutes when you had the core four together, 75 minutes, their plus minus, you mentioned about this season, their plus minus last postseason with their core four, minus 11. They're underwater with their four stars on the floor. That can't happen. The whole point of assembling a star-studded cast like this is that they're going to blow out the team that they have just by sheer talent. And they were not a good fit last year. Something had to change. And when you got James Harden on the other side, kind of feels like, all right, well, if we didn't have the sum of the parts being greater than the whole. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That's what you want, is the whole being the greater than the sum of the parts. And it was the opposite in the postseason last year, right, Dan? So like this, you're admitting, you're being pragmatic, and you're saying it did not work last year. Who can we go get to kind of shake this up? And I think Harden is a worthy opportunity to try to take that swing. And even if it doesn't land Giannis, or if it doesn't land an old friend, Lauri Markkanen, I don't think it's a bad idea to go switch out James Harden and see what you have. Because guess what? Last year and the year before that are two of the most disappointing postseason runs. And I know that James Harden's been like poster child for disappointing postseason runs. But like, if you're worried about Donovan Mitchell, you got to do something, because foot issues are not something you play around with. And James Harden, for what it's, we got to be honest here, he's been super available for the Clippers the last few years. So I he might be 36, but Darius Garland, the way he's been looking lately, he looks like the 36-year-old, and James Harden looks like the 26-year-old.
Yeah, and you know, I say for one reason or another, and we talk about what might be motivating this, that's going to bring us to our third and final little number. It's not a little number, it's a pretty big one. 53,817,156. That's how many dollars Donovan Mitchell is owed on the player option that he holds in his contract for the 2027-28 season. He is also eligible for a contract extension this summer. If he were to signal that he has no interest in a contract extension, and if he were to signal that he would be interested in declining that player option for 2027, he could wind up being an unrestricted free agent in 2027 at age 31. That probably winds up being the belle of the ball in free agency, or at least one of the most sought-after players there. If he was to signal those things, that he was no longer interested in being around in Cleveland, he'd basically be starting the clock and telling the Cavs, you got like a year and a half to move me, and or avoid me walking for nothing. And that's the kind of threat that can curtail your runway, that can speed up your timeline. And I wrote about that in a column yesterday at Yahoo Sports before the deal actually became official. And sure enough, Wednesday morning from Jason Lloyd and Joe Varden, some Cleveland guys at The Athletic, quote, the Cavs were feeling the pressure from their best player, Donovan Mitchell, to make changes ahead of Thursday's trades under the threat of a contract extension he may or may not sign. Three league sources said Mitchell, who has one guaranteed season left and a player option for 2027-28, conveyed either personally or through his representatives that he did not think the organization should stand pat for the rest of the season and wait for potential moves in the summer. For the record, a Cavs official denied that on the record to The Athletic. But the idea was like he is throwing his weight around. He has said, I've seen what's going on. I see where we are now. I don't believe it's good enough. We need to do something now. And that, as much as anything, seems like the biggest swing factor here for this deal. You know, why the Cavs are speeding things up and looking to expedite their process here. It seems like Donovan Mitchell basically demanding that the Cavs stop thinking of themselves as a team built around a core four and more a team built around him. And that if you don't do what you need to do to improve our chances of winning a championship this season, you're not going to be built around me for very long.
Yeah, and I didn't hear anything about the Defensive Player of the Year in those comments, Evan Mobley, and I didn't hear anything about Jared Allen. It's all about Donovan Mitchell. And so I wonder what Donovan Mitchell thinks about the rest of that core four if he was intimating that this isn't good enough and I might have to take matters in my own hands next summer. I think it's a really fascinating situation with Donovan Mitchell, because we've always been, ever since he got moved to Cleveland, been plotting, like, how does he get to New York, going back home? How does he get back to the Knicks, where it feels like he's someone who wants to go back home? But I don't know. We just saw James Harden go back home, and now he wants to get out of there. So I can't imagine that every team, every player in the NBA, when we were saying, hey, he might come back home, it's not always what they want. And the question is, what does Donovan Mitchell want? And apparently it looks like James Harden is what he wanted, and they're saying all the right things right now. We'll see what it looks like on the court. I feel like, Dan, James Harden at this point is in the running for another championship, and it would be poetic if he beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the championship next to Donovan Mitchell. Of course, that would be an amazing pie in the sky scenario for the Cavs. They're able to win a championship this season without LeBron James. I don't think he's coming yet. I suspect it's something that might happen this offseason as a free agent. And I outlined it there is, you know, LeBron is a free agent this summer. Does he take a discount to go play with Donovan Mitchell? Is that what Donovan Mitchell wants? And ultimately, if Donovan Mitchell doesn't want that, what do the Cavs do in that scenario, Dan? Donovan Mitchell, hey, how do you feel about LeBron coming back home for his farewell tour? And if Donovan Mitchell's like, I actually don't feel like that's a great situation for me, does that actually change the calculus for the Cavs? We don't know what that is. We didn't know 3 days ago, and all of a sudden we're hearing now the Cavs felt like they needed to make a move, moving away from Darius Garland to go get James Harden. And I will just point this out before we move on to Triple J and all the other deals. James Harden has been in this position before where he's entering the postseason as this, you know, slight favorite or the pole position to win the Eastern Conference or win his conference. Right now, I think the total is 1.5 expected titles based on the postseason odds right before the playoffs begin. So if you look at sportsoddshistory.com, James Harden has had 150% basically cumulative implied odds on winning the championship. If you add up all of the postseason runs, his best opportunity was the 21 Nets, then the 2018 Rockets. And of course, coming off the bench in the big three in OKC in 2012, going against the Miami Heat in 2012, they had a 22% chance of winning the title entering the postseason. And this iteration, as you see there, 2026 has a 7.7% chance, according to BetMGM implied odds. Donovan Mitchell, that's why you do this move, is before the James Harden trade, it was not that high. And now after this James Harden trade, you're essentially going win now. I know Darius Garland is 10 years younger than James Harden, but we can't rely on Darius Garland to get healthy in time for Donovan Mitchell to feel great about getting that player option done, taking that player option, or taking the contract extension. Really interesting quote from that executive saying, people don't realize the Cavs are in the same position with Donovan as the Bucks are with Giannis. So in a way, this is, if we're taking that metaphor, this is the Bucks going to get Damian Lillard. Maybe not going as all in on Damian Lillard a couple years ago, but it's essentially the same move, is we're trying to find ways to keep Giannis in happy, contending for titles. And in the Cleveland Cavaliers case, it's in the form of James Harden, not peak Damian Lillard. Definitely not peak James Harden. So we'll see if this gets done, that they're able to go and get to the NBA Finals. It's open. As you said at the top, Detroit, they are awesome this year. On the other side, it's like they haven't been to the past the first round in almost 20 years. So if you're looking at this and saying the door is open, James Harden's going to beat down that door for the first time as a lead guy getting to the NBA Finals since 2012. You look at all the other situations, Dan, and you can pick apart why the Knicks might not have the best odds at getting to the champ. They don't have the strongest pathway. The Pistons don't have the strongest pathway. And so I understand why Kobe Altman is like, not only does this keep Donovan Mitchell reportedly happy, but we have as good a chance as anybody to do this thing. And I don't blame him with Jason Tatum saying, I'm not really sure if I'm coming back. And then Giannis situation in Milwaukee. I kind of feel like they didn't have many cards to play. And this is a pretty good one.
Yeah, it puts them in position. I mean, it certainly it improves their team this season, because I don't know what you could expect from Darius Garland on the other side of the All-Star break whenever he is able to come back. I think you know what you can expect from James Harden, generally speaking. And we've seen him have, you know, run hot after he gets to a new team, be able to establish his value. I mean, he wants to make sure everybody knows that he deserves that next deal. And I think we've also seen James Harden, for all the high usage, all the, you know, high touches, all that kind of stuff, we've seen him be the table setter. Yeah, like we all laughed at the idea of him coming in and saying to the Cleveland or to the Clippers and saying, I am the system. He's a pretty damn good offensive system, generally speaking. And he's made it work next to all kinds of different offensive players and had high-end offenses wherever he's gone. I think that's the bet here in Cleveland. The best version of the Cavs were the best offense in the NBA. They've been closer to eighth or ninth for most of this season. This is a bet that if you are upgrading from Garland to Harden, you're going to get higher up in those standings. You're going to give yourself a better chance at outscoring the other guys. And you're also going to have one fewer sort of small guard liability, vulnerability on the defensive end. Not like James Harden's going to lock anybody down, but a little harder to hunt a 6'5 guy. And so I think all those things are baked in because it's this year. And then, well, you know, Donovan Mitchell sees what he sees before he gets to the summertime and makes some choices. It's we got to get busy living right now. And James Harden deal, the James Harden deal is the Cavs doing that.
Yeah. Just want to know where James Harden is going to go when he's 38 and plot his exit. So that's not for today. That's for 2 years. And honestly, the Cavs are probably like, whatever. We'll deal with that when it comes. We want to win now because we've got Donovan Mitchell, a Giannis situation with our own Donovan Mitchell here. So we got lots more to talk about with Giannis and with Jaren Jackson Jr. going to Utah, a big stunner there. We're going to talk about all those right after the break. All right, so that was a lot on James Harden and Darius Garland. We'll see what the Cavs do next. And does it involve Giannis Antetokounmpo? We'll see. As you can read over at yahoosports.com, the column I wrote yesterday was you know, pie in the sky scenario for the Cavs. Can they get both Giannis and James Harden at the deadline? Well, step one of that, getting James Harden's already done. Giannis, we'll see. And he just did a little media tour. He was on the phone with Eric Name and Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim had this one-on-one exclusive with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And then Eric Name apparently got a one-on-one with Giannis Antetokounmpo because he felt bad about giving it to one reporter. And Giannis is a sweetheart. And you can see how he's like, I don't want to leave here. I don't want to make this trade demand. All these people mean so much to me over the years and winning a championship here. I kind of felt like this was almost like taking a page out of the New York Post or the whatever it is and just saying like, love my city, love you guys, and wanted to get this time with the reporters. Maybe that's me being a cynic, but it felt like to me that Giannis was trying to have his own words get on the record with the local paper, the local writers, and say how he really feels about the city with a coded, like, I don't really want to talk about the front office and the team. I just want to talk about my love for Milwaukee. Dan, really heartfelt words from Giannis in these stories. You can go check them out at The Athletic and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. What was your takeaway of Giannis in the last 24 hours doing this media blitz to tell everybody how he feels about the situation?
Yeah, it came also after he did like an on-court shooting workout ahead of the Bucks last game. You know, it's like we you've noted on the show, we don't have we never got an official timeline from the Bucks on when Giannis's calf strain might be, when the expectation for his return would be, when they would be an update on it. Giannis himself diagnosed it as a 4 to 6 week injury, but has also like communicated he wants to come back and play. He's not gonna just go sit out. So I think some people read him getting out there on the floor before the game as like a little bit of a pressure, like, yep, I'm working on coming back and I'm going to be on the floor. So get your offers in, or like, hey, Bucks, if you are planning to just tank and try to sit me down and tank it out, I'm going to play. You're absolutely right to highlight the emotional component of this. I think we are sometimes, because we have to think about these things in the context of team building and asset management. And the job of an NBA executive is to try to win the NBA championship. And what moves do we make to try to get ourselves closer to that? These are really personal things for the players and individuals too. So like, we can make fun of Giannis not wanting to be the bad guy. Giannis has been in Milwaukee as long as he's been anywhere else in his life. He's spent his entire adulthood there. He got there at age 18. He's 31 years old with a wife and family there now. And like the idea of I've been at, like, this place has been everything to me. I've gotten to like live my dreams here. And now it's time for me to go someplace else. Like I can empathize very much with why that is a difficult thing, why he might not want to be the guy who says, actually just get me out of here. It does seem like what he's setting up in these conversations is like a circle that can't be squared. I only want to be here. Deep in my heart, I want to be in. I want to be a Buck forever, and I want to retire a Buck, and I want to win championships here. And I want to know that we're trying to do that. And the Bucks have done everything that they can for years, right, to try to make that happen around Giannis. And now it's just sort of at a place where the cupboard is damn near empty. And I don't know what kind of rabbit John Horst might have left to pull out of his hat to get Giannis back to that sort of situation. Giannis intimated to Eric Name that, like, if the Bucks were this summer, if they could convince him that they would be able to be back in the championship contention conversation this summer, then he'd, like, 1,000% be like, yeah, cool, I'm staying. That's a difficult thing to do with given what the Bucks have on hand. I thought it was interesting the parts of Giannis talking, especially to Jim Ozarski, where he's like, I've seen the love of the people and what they wish for me. If that's not the case and people have different agendas within our own team, something's got to change. You know, I want to be a Milwaukee Buck until I retire and win a championship here. If that's not possible to happen, and if then you realize maybe that's not the case and maybe they're looking elsewhere and that's not what they're trying to do, then you have to be in the plans of what they're trying to do. I know what my goal is. I don't know what their goal is. You know, he asks Jim Ozarski, ask them, meaning the ownership and front office, what's your goal? What do you want to do? They might want to reveal. They might even want to sell. They might want to do some other things. Maybe. I don't know. I thought that was all really interesting. And maybe, you know, maybe that's just a smoke bomb. And then, you run away. But it seemed to me like that was a through line here in the comments. Like, yes, all of the comments about like me and what do I want to do? And am I going to try to, you know, shoot my way out of town? Maybe ask them if they don't want to try to win anymore, if they don't want to try to compete anymore, if they've reached a point where they're like, we have hit the end of the line and we have to think about what comes next. A shift of responsibility, a shift of potential blame, whatever. It didn't necessarily make me think anything different about the situation, but I thought that was notable. And I think that, I do think Giannis speaks earnestly about the way he feels about Milwaukee. I think it's just, we're talking about two difficult things to put together and make happen all in one spot.
I don't want to be the bad guy, and I'm not saying who the bad guy is, but they might be having some different agendas, and I don't know what they might want to do going forward. I'm not going to say who the bad guy is, but that might be the bad guy right over there with the big F-O on their chest. Yeah, I think that's what he's doing here, is he's kind of passive-aggressively suggesting that the Milwaukee Bucks want to rebuild, they want to tank, they want to turn the page, and he is out here physically trying to prove to everybody out on the court that he's trying to get back. And I think what he's doing is earnestly trying to come back, but also putting the medical team, and with Doc Rivers' quotes after the calf injury, having no timetable and saying, yeah, Giannis is right, but we have no timetable for his return. I feel like Giannis is trying to point them, the medical team or the front office or whomever, as the one who's trying to hold me back from playing. It's a weird situation. There's so much that's weird about this. It's the state of affairs, not just in the NBA, but with Darren Peterson and Kansas. A lot of people are using these injuries, and it's very awkward. It's a very awkward thing for the medical team, the coaching staff. Everyone is dancing around this issue of how legit and severe is this injury, and who are the second, third, fourth opinions in this stuff. And it gets all this gray area is really challenging for teams to manage. And I think it is the case for Milwaukee, because they have a huge incentive to lose as many games as possible going forward with this draft class. I mentioned Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonsa. We got to talk about it. This Jaren Jackson Jr. trade is as big of a stunner and a surprise as I've had covering this league. And here's why. The Utah Jazz, like the Milwaukee Bucks, are right on that cusp of having a really good shot at a franchise changing prospect, top four pick. They're right on the cusp. Right now, the standings are Utah is at number 6, Milwaukee is at number 8, and in between them is Dallas, and then tied with 8 with Milwaukee is the Memphis Grizzlies at 19-29. The difference between 6 and 9, Dan, is massive. When they flatten the lottery odds, this is where all the action is going to be, is right around 6 to 9. And this coincidentally is where Milwaukee, and what Giannis is kind of hinting at, is that Milwaukee might have other plans than to try to win as many games going forward and having the most out of this roster. And the Utah Jazz just swung for Jaren Jackson Jr. in a year in which AJ DeBonsa, who's over there in Provo, is playing for BYU and has, you know, close ties with people in the Utah Jazz organizations by close proximity of being the biggest star in Utah since Keith Van Horn? Like, who would be the closest one to AJ DeBonsa and what he's doing this season? And they're making a play for one of the better big men in the NBA with a big contract that just signed a big extension. It is so confusing to me. Like, are they on tilt? The whole idea of tanking and they haven't been able to get the number one overall pick and really luck into the draft. Are they just like, man, it feels like the basketball gods are not going to smile upon us with the AJ DeBonsa draft and, of course, Cam Boozer and Darren Peterson, that maybe we just, you know, maybe we just try to win and see how things go. Or is this a Miles Turner situation where with Milwaukee was like, he's good, but is he going to like take us out of the tanking conversation? Is he that good that Miles Turner acquiring him precludes us from losing a whole bunch of games this year? I am stunned by this because I feel like with AJ DeBonsa, Utah would never want to give up the chance of getting him. And I didn't even mention the top eight protected pick. The top eight protected pick for Utah, if they're not in the top eight, it goes to OKC, which is nuts that they would try to go for Jaren Jackson Jr. here. But who knows? They might really value Jaren Jackson Jr. and say he is the guy that's going to turn around this organization and go from the worst defense three times in a row, the worst defense in the NBA, three times in a row, that they are the worst defense in NBA history just on a points per possession basis. But I am stunned that the Utah Jazz, Austin Ainge, Danny Ainge, and the front office swung for Jaren Jackson Jr. I don't think he's still Defensive Player of the Year, but I did not think that this is the year that they were going to try to go for it. Dan, what did you make sense of this?
Yeah, I think a couple of things are going on. I think one, there's part of me that almost feels like this is a delayed reaction new owner syndrome, right? Like Ryan Smith bought the Jazz and they were in the midst of that kind of deep rebuild. And so we haven't seen them hit the gas, but like we also know from the, you know, his boosterism and his support of the BYU athletic program, Ryan Smith doesn't necessarily want to lose. He wants to sort of support the injection of excitement and winning and more talent into the team. And we also know before the season, Austin Ainge, when he, you know, ascended to that head of the basketball operations job, said, like, we're not going to be tanking anymore. Like, this is the end. Maybe he meant, like, eventually soon it'll be the end. Because I think that what we're looking at, as you mentioned, they are, I think, now 16 and 35. The Jazz have been pretty creatively. I think Lauri Markkanen, I believe, missed 7 games with the flu recently. They've been in situations where guys
they've
are...
They've been fined for their injury management, quote-unquote.
Last year, I think it was $100,000 last year they got fined. Yeah. And I think it'll be awfully interesting to see how they navigate that this season. Because, yeah, we've had times where, you know, Walker Kessler is out for the season, had a labrum tear, had season-ending shoulder surgery. Easy for me to say as I talk for a living. And, you know, there's been guys in and out of the lineup. And this guy's resting and this guy's not available. And we've seen that. Which has led to amazing things like 3 straight triple doubles for Yusuf Nurkic and Isaiah Collier playing all 48 minutes and getting 22 assists last night. There are going to be some weird moments like that, right? I think they looked at it and said, and I think the expectation is the Jazz, yeah, as you mentioned, top 8 protected pick. If they don't finish in the top 8 of the draft lottery, they are going to send that pick to Oklahoma City from a Derek Favors salary dump in 2021. If you want to know like the long tail of these things, which is why teams are pretty nervous about sending out protected picks and stuff like that. And why teams ask for the far future draft picks, not just the ones right away. I think the idea is they were about to have like $55 million or so in cap space this summer. And I think they looked around and are like, we're not going to get anybody to sign here. And we need to spend that money. And how do we do something that makes the best use of that money? And you can throw out an idea, and they reportedly are interested in retaining Walker Kessler when he hits restricted free agency this summer. And you can look at it and say, Kessler, Jaren Jackson Jr., Lauri Markkanen, it's a huge and skilled and pretty interesting front court. You are, if you're able to throw out Kessler and Triple J together, suddenly what's been, as you said, the worst defense in NBA history should be a hell of a lot better than that really fast, even if you have bad point of attack defenders. What else helps bad point of attack defense? Being friggin' huge everywhere. And if you go 7'2 Kessler, 6'11 or 6'10 or 11 Jaren Jackson Jr., 7'1 Markkanen, Ace Bailey, 6'9 at the two, maybe. Keontae George, pretty, you know, decent size at the point. Like, suddenly you have a team that has positional size everywhere, which has been like the kind of calling card of how the Spurs went, obviously when Wembanyama helps, but having huge dudes everywhere at every position is like the straightest line to being decent on defense. You improve there. Jaren Jackson Jr. has always been kind of at his best and most comfortable at the four, playing next to a big burly five. Jonas Valanciunas, Steven Adams, the limited moments that he's played with Zach Edey. Walker Kessler has been really, really good as a screen and roll, rim-protecting big man, one of the best per-minute rebounders in the league when he's been healthy. Covers up for Jaren Jackson's weak rebounding, right? We've seen Lauri Markkanen play his best ball as a big wing. It started when he was in Cleveland and he was playing next to Mobley and Allen as at the three. It's happened at times when he's been in Utah. Like, there's a pathway here for this team to fit together pretty neatly with like skill and size and shooting. Maybe not a ton of ball handling, maybe not a ton of passing, but I think it's a really big vote of confidence in Keontae George being that kind of creator and saying, we'll spend our money here as opposed to trying to say, I don't know, give Austin Reeves a max in the summer because we think he can be our number one creator and ball handler guy. And you put him with, I know Isaiah Collier is a backup point guard. You got Ace Bailey and Bryce Sensabaugh, Cody Williams, these guys, these recent draftees on the wing. You've got, if you are able to stay out of the, you know, avoid getting down below eighth, another like mid to high lottery pick potentially in this super talented draft to add to that mix. And like, all of a sudden you got like a really interesting core. So I think to me, that's like, the Jazz looking at it and saying, this is our last season of the deep rebuild has lasted too long. It is now time to start being good. What's the best player we can get? And what's the best way we can spend our money to make that a possibility next season? And Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, was a pretty interesting pick and a pretty, I don't know, kind of like an elegant solution to a couple of their different problems. When we actually get to see it all together, I don't know. Tony Jones of The Athletic, formerly a Jazz beat guy, said, get ready to speak gastric distress, everybody. We might see a lot of guys with like stomach flu, basically, for the rest of the season, which I thought was a pretty funny way to frame it. But yeah, I think that's the thought process for the Jazz. Like, I think the Jazz are just kind of like, we're done sucking. We kind of want to start being good. And we think that the best way to do that is positional size, shooting, and skill. And then we sort of take one more bite at the top of the lottery apple and see where we go from there.
Well, here are the stakes, okay? So Jaren Jackson Jr. had turf toe procedure done in the offseason in July. And it was kind of one of those, you know, is he going to be ready for training camp in the regular season? He hasn't really missed much time at all this year with that injury, but something to keep an eye on. Because they have a 96% chance of holding that top eight protected pick if they are the sixth worst record in the NBA. Okay, 96%. Remember that
96.
Number. At the number seventh slot, you have a 86% chance of holding on to that top eight protected pick. At the number eighth slot, you go from not 96%, not 86%, but 58% if two teams Whoa. Jump you. Say Memphis or Milwaukee or Dallas jump. If two of those three teams jump you in the standings, as we're seeing it now, you have 16-35 Utah, Dallas at 19-31, 3.5 games back, and Memphis at 19-29 just traded you Jaren Jackson Jr. If you fall to number eight, you basically are at a coin flip of holding that pick in an AJ DeBonsa, Darren Peterson, and Cam Boozer draft. If you are at number nine, let's say all three of those teams, Dallas and Memphis, and I'm just saying from six to nine, if you go from six to nine, those two teams jump you, you're looking at 23%. Okay. 23% wow. chance at losing your or holding that pick. So you go from 96 to 86 to 58% to 23%. And so the worst case scenario here is that Jaren, in a weird conundrum for the NBA, not just the Utah Jazz, is that Jaren Jackson Jr., by trading for that guy, you're almost losing the opportunity to get the franchise cornerstone in Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonsa, and having a good chance at that. And that is a risk I would not be willing to take and stomach, especially when you got AJ DeBonsa around the corner. I wouldn't have done the deal, but it does. It's easy for me to say here in this chair in Charlotte, North Carolina. Probably not easy for Will Hardy to sit there and say, yeah, I'm continually happy to be a 16-35 team and winning 25 games and having no defensive talent on my team. You get a former defensive player of the year who's not in his prime. He hasn't been that guy in a few years, but it gives him an opportunity to draw up some X's and O's and actually program a defense that you feel pretty good about going forward. I just worry that he might be too good for them to hold on to that pick, but it's going to be very interesting, as Tony Jones pointed out. You're probably going to see some weird sicknesses, illnesses, injuries going forward, but the NBA absolutely does not want that. We saw this with the Dallas Mavericks, and they're talking about how to fix this, the top 8 protected pick and the extreme tanking incentive with those top 8, top 4 protected picks. The NBA is trying to get rid of this, and we'll see if Utah, how aggressive they are or how creative they are in skirting that, because going from 96% odds of keeping that pick to 23% odds, that is a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, the NBA can say they are looking at this all they want. This is the system as it exists right now, and the job of an NBA executive is to figure out how to move within the system as it exists right now. And so, like, and if I'm Ryan Smith and I'm worth, you know, however much money I'm worth, find me $100,000 again. But if it puts me in position to field one of the, you know, get his AJ DeBanzo or one of those other guys and field this roster next year and suddenly go from being like one of the worst teams in the NBA for 4 years running to, I mean, that roster could get you back into play-in or even play-off contention, even in a tough West. You know, we've seen what the play-in situation looks like in the West. It's not that hard to get up there if you actually want to. And I think this indicates that the Jazz actually want to. Can I give you one little number about this that's fun for me personally? Yeah. The Jazz, as bad as they've been for the last 4 years, they've had 2,703 minutes with Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen together on the floor in that span. In that time, they're plus 21. The Jazz have been so bad for 4 years, but when they actually play Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen together, they've actually had a positive point differential. So, like, there's at least a case, there's a theory of the case here. What if instead of not playing our best guys, we played them and then gave them some more good guys to play with? It's just crazy enough Novel. That it might work. Mm-hmm. But as you say, it's easy for us here to sit in our chairs and say the best thing for your franchise might be this. That's the flip side of that. That's where the Grizzlies are right now. It's the cold, sober, analytical look at what's best for your franchise right now is still a pretty bitter pill to swallow if you're a Grizzlies fan watching Jaren Jackson Jr. go out the door after you just watched Desmond Bane go out the door and feeling like you are about to watch Ja Morant go out the door.
February 20th, a couple weeks from now, Utah at Memphis. We'll learn a lot in that game. So a couple weeks, we'll see how much they want to keep that pick going forward. Jaren Jackson Jr. on the move. I think the only player of that draft class, of course, Luka and Trae Young, the only player left on the team that basically the last hat that they wore on that night is Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets. So Jaren Jackson Jr. is now gone from Memphis, and there's only one left standing, and it's Miles Bridges of all people. So a crazy year where you have Trae Young on the move, Luka Doncic on the move, and what do you got?
Sorry, from our guy Keith Smith, the only other player of all 60 guys drafted in the 2018 draft that's still with his original team, there's Miles Bridges, as you said. The only other guy of all 60 picks is Mitchell Robinson with the New York Knicks. Every other player, all of the 60 guys drafted in that draft class, every other player except for Bridges and Mitch is with a different team than the one that drafted him. And that's seven drafts ago. It's just so crazy. Like, I know we
that
know
nuts, yeah.
that the league accelerates, right? That the pace of player movement, shorter contracts, more churn, more deals, all that kind of stuff. Everything's moving faster. That just feels so wild to me. that the entirety of the draft, except for those two dudes, has moved on from their first team. That's, so yeah, pretty incredible snapshot of how quickly things move now.
Less than 8 years, right? It's been 8 years.
Yeah.
And no one's still with their team except for those guys. Yeah, that's wild. Well, we'll see what happens with Miles Bridges and Mitchell Robinson in the next 24 hours. It might be zero when it's all said and done. Who knows? Got a lot of questions heading into the deadline tomorrow. Go check out Yahoo NBA. Subscribe now. And so you'll get all the updates when we have new episodes out. And we will be covering this trade deadline at Yahoo NBA at YouTube. Go subscribe, listen to this, wherever you get your podcast. Tell everybody, give us a 5-star review, rating and review, please. Please hang around for next week. We'll do another show with a big number and we'll be back with our squad. I want to thank them. Last week did such a bang up job with the live show. Thank you for doing that. Emmy, Sarah, Ryan, and of course, who am I forgetting? The squad. Brad, of course, our newcomer, Brad. Hey, Brad, thank you so much. And everyone behind the scenes at Yahoo. I can't wait to do this trade deadline show on Thursday. Check that out. And yeah, Dan, any last thoughts here?
Get some coffee, everybody. Put some coffee on. Take your nap or take your naps now, because I think it's probably going to be pretty hectic for the next 24, 30 hours or so. So buckle in, everyone.